And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns, a.k.a. the absolute, the guy that everybody thinks loves Mitch Leidner. So we welcome you here to a breakdown podcast of the Colorado State versus Minnesota game. Obviously, the Gophers came out on top in overtime. I believe it was 23-20 with a Ryan Santoso field goal. So I think, Luke, we might have a couple of things to talk about tonight.
Yeah.
I hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that the big thing that people really want to hear about is the play of the quarterback, and especially, you know, the passing game. So I think that that's got to be.
Wait, what's wrong with the quarterback play?
Well, allegedly it's not pretty, but, you know, it has been effective. Mm-hmm. They are 1-1, you know, played the number 2 team in the country, got a road win against Colorado State, and a very good Colorado State team as well. You know, it's not pretty, but it has been, you know, somewhat effective. They're at least they've met my expectations thus far.
Yeah, and thankfully, Luke, we have one of the elite Gopher football minds in all of America joining us once again, in former Gopher center and Eden Prairie Eagle Derek Burns, who is also on the line here. So we have the Burns to Burns connection. And for all the people who asked me on Twitter if Derek and I are in somewhat of relation, the true story is we are both cousins to former Wild player, Derek. No, it's not Derek Burns. Who's the Wild player, Derek? Who was he?
It's not Jerry Burns. I don't think he's playing hockey.
It's going to bother me. I got to look at So we have Derek in here. You know, he's going to obviously give some great insight. Brent Burns is our cousin as well, so. You know, a lot of Burns connections here in Minnesota, and we're happy to have Derek along. So before I go off on a giant rant on Mitch Leidner, Luke, why don't you introduce what the theme is for tonight?
Yeah, so tonight we're going to take a slightly different approach than what we did last week. We're gonna stick with the Scholastic theme and do somewhat of a report card structure. So we'll go through kind of position group by position group, and Derek and Ryan will each give their grade for the Colorado State game and give some justification as to why. So I want to start here, obviously, since the hot button topic is the passing game, is I want to get your guys' opinion and your report card on the passing game. So Derek, let's start with you.
Well, obviously, they struggled the first half, especially, as everybody knows, and were able to do some things in the second half. But, you know, I think it was a lot like the first game. I think Leidner specifically was doing okay on his reads, you know, the pre- and post-snap reads, deciding who to throw to, reading the defense, going through the progressions, but, again, just missing his spot. So his execution, his throwing, just wasn't consistent. It was good at times, a little bit better versus zone defense, and a little tougher against a tight man coverage. So the passing game as a whole, apart from, you know, some inconsistency at quarterback, you know, you had drops from the wide receivers, which you can't have. So, just to put that in perspective, you know, coaches for drops, the expectation for a wide receivers coach is no drops. So, you know, one or two drops is depending on how the game flows, what the throws are like, the situations may or may not be acceptable, but anything above that is going to be a, you know, a needs improvement basically from that coaching staff. So, you know, overall, I would say, you know, a C minus or a D plus on the passing game. They've got a lot of room to improve on. Again, I think less, you know, they're doing okay on the knowing what to do, the route running, the reading and things like that, just need to execute better.
All right, before I give my grade, Derek, I just want to ask you specifically, what have been your thoughts on the quarterback play for Mitch Leidner through two games?
Well, I think that just judging, taking last year into account, I think that his history has been that he plays pretty well in about 3 out of every 4 games. So if you're looking at a 12-game schedule, you're looking at, you know, 8 or 9 games that he plays, I guess, well enough. you know, you get enough out of him to win at that position or to play well enough. And in three or four games out of a 12-game schedule, he's struggled and it's been difficult. So I would say thus far in the first two games, he has struggled. I think that if you're putting yourself in the coach's shoes and what do you do moving forward, do you start looking other places? I think the coaching staff is going to realize that this is his struggle. This is his playing bad. This isn't regular play from him. I think if he was going to play this way every game, that would probably be more concerning. And of course, they'll watch that going forward. But he struggled the first two games. But if history is a guide at all, he has been up and down. But he's played well enough in more games than he's not played well enough, if that makes sense. So, yep, he's struggled. Mentally, I think he's done okay. Again, he's done okay on the reads. He's not throwing interceptions. He's not making big mistakes, missing wide open receivers. It's just being able to hit his spot.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm just going to give my thoughts here for a couple of minutes. I'm just this whole quarterback situation here for the Gophers. I wrote about it today and for on Gopher Digest, just about what I took away from the Gopher games. And I think I'm going to read here verbatim what I wrote, just so fans can get this across. And so what I wrote is, I know while writing this that there are already a strong number of people who don't agree that Mitch Leiner should be the starting quarterback for the Minnesota Gophers this season. And I'm here to tell you that I'm not one of them. I know that others will be, reading this and telling me for it seems like the 100th time that, for the 100th time in the last 11 days that I'm a Leidner apologist, and I'm here to tell you that. That's kind of my point here is I don't have to believe he's the next coming of Tom Brady, which I don't, and I want that across, but I do believe that he's the Minnesota's best option to win. I do not agree that he's terrible, as the Gophers have already proven they can win with Leidner. As fans seem to forget, this is the same quarterback who won 8 games for the second straight season for the first time in at least a few decades. I don't remember the stat off the top of my head. And the Gophers made their best bowl game since 1962 last year, so that's 53 years. Mitch also hasn't thrown an interception in over 20 quarters. So the Ohio State game was his last quarter. And yes, I understand that there are some, significant fumbling issues still there, as he's got 3 fumbles in the first 2 games, which is huge, but he is taking better care of the ball. And for those yearning for true freshman Demaryius Crofts, just because Leidner hasn't taken huge steps forward doesn't mean you take a leap of faith into the unknown with a true freshman quarterback when you have a proven guy who's led the Gophers to arguably their best back-to-back seasons in decades. The entire point I'm trying to get across with this piece is, well, I don't think, again, he's the next Tom Brady, Alex Smith, or even just a decent, a really decent quarterback. He's the guy that gives Minnesota the best chance to win. And while fans can blow up my Twitter, blow up Gopher Digest as much as they want, saying that, put Demaryius Crofts out there, he's, Leidner's egregious. Really? Because if you look at the stats, okay, and I know that people are shaking their head saying, you're stubborn, all you do is love Leidner. That's not what I'm trying to say here. I think he's at about 51-52% completion percentage through 2 games. And Derek, correct me if I'm wrong here, I think he's also got 6 or 7 drops from his receivers, I think three or four each game. So as Derek was saying that they only had 1 drop, so 6 more of these 7 were caught. Leidner's sitting at 60% completion percentage with 3 touchdowns and 0 interceptions through 2 games. If I were to have said that 12 days ago, the night before the TCU game, every Gopher fan out there would be like, okay, yeah, that's a step forward. The issue is with Mitch, if he misses, it's a bad miss. Okay, I know, again, he played a lot better in the second half. The first half was rough. But in the second half, I mean, he only had 2 or 3 bad misses. And I mean, when they were bad, obviously, the rollout on the 3rd down to a wide open guy in the flat and Nick Hart. And then he just barely overthrew Nick Hart as well in the end zone there. But My issue is, and it will continue to be until I see something otherwise, like if Leidner really struggles with turnovers or gets injured or something, but he's the best option Minnesota has at quarterback, and it's not close. This is coming from a guy who really, really is excited about the future of Gopher quarterbacks, and Demaryius Croft, who's the freshman that everybody wants to see. And then 2016-wise, you have Tony Poljan, who I've seen a couple of times in person. He's going to be a good one as well. But it's just, if I think of a letter grade after that long rant, I would say the passing game, for all the reasons Derek said, you know, Leidner hasn't got a ton of help from his receivers so far, and his misses have been egregious. They've been bad, you know, but I'd give it a C. There were some good things. And another thing to say, Leidner has, for the third straight game, had career, he set career highs in passing attempts. So for the Missouri game was his career high, and the TCU game surpassed that, and the Colorado State game surpassed it. So he's passing the ball a ton, so people are seeing him, you know, not throw a spiral, and it's just, he's just the best guy to give the Gophers the chance to win, and that's ultimately the only thing I care about, is the Gophers winning. You know, I don't care if it's pretty. I'm pretty sure Derek will say the same thing, but I'd give the passing game a C, Luke.
All right, so one thing I want to point out with the cry for Demaryius Croft, we have to keep in mind, too, that Demaryius Croft has only played quarterback for one season in high school, right? So a step from a high school senior to college is a big step. But when you've only played the position for 1 year, it's an even further step. So I'm not trying to say that he's not going to be an effective quarterback. I think it's just it's a great opportunity for him to redshirt, right? It just makes a lot of sense in his progression and his growth. And I agree with you, Ryan. And I think that right now Mitch is the best quarterback in terms of giving them a chance to win. Would Demaryius add some flash? Absolutely. Does he throw a nice ball? Absolutely. But ultimately, I'd like to see him get a redshirt year in if possible. So I wanted to add my two cents on that, being right. That he's only really played the position for 1 year.
I will say I'm pretty sure Demaryius played at least 2 years of quarterback, not just
okay.
One.
Yeah.
I don't believe his senior year was his first. I think he played his junior and senior year. He may have played as a true freshman on the freshman team, so I don't know if anybody counts that, but I know he's got 2 years of varsity, I believe. So
okay, so two...
not a ton of time, as you said. His only third year really playing full-time quarterback, but I mean, I'm not opposed to lifting the red shirt for Croft. If he's the guy that gives Minnesota the best chance to win at the end of the day, which I don't think he is yet, which I think he could be come 2016 in the spring, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not opposed to lifting the red shirt. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on the field against Kent State in some mop-up duty, but we'll see.
Okay.
And let's move on, because there were a lot of other great, you know, good positives to come out of the Gopher game on Saturday.
All right, let's talk about that rushing game then, obviously highlighted by Rodney Smith. Derek, what was your letter grade for the rushing game?
Well, I think for the running back position was very good. I would probably give it a B+. Tweeted out a couple things. I'm very impressed with Rodney Smith's vision and some of the things we saw on Saturday. One play in particular, zone read, he got the handoff, cut back, and then made a play side cut, which is a second cut that goes back towards the front side, and that's very rare for someone of that young to be able to do. So seeing some really exciting things out of him, and he's close on some runs. He's had some good runs, of course, but he's really close to breaking a long run. He said, I think in the last couple of games, I would say at least three, if not four, carries that he's come very close to breaking for a long run. So very good there. Even Roderick coming in actually had a couple nice carries. The run blocking, which I know we'll get to the offensive line, I think struggled a bit, and maybe we can talk about that more when we get to that position. But just for the running back itself, I would say overall it was very good.
Yeah. I mean, I did a piece today on the emergence of Rodney Smith, and I'd argue he's really going to start to take over the bell cow back role for Minnesota. The nice thing when you look at Rodney Smith and you watch him play, and then you look at the stats, he's at 100 and I believe 198 yards with 37 carries. So he's almost averaging 100 yards a game. But the nice thing about it is he's averaging over 5 yards a carry, and there's not anything skewing that data what I mean by that is his long is only 26, I believe. So he's, you know, he's consistently getting 4, 5, 6, 7 yards a carry. And it's something that he's really been a spark plug for this offense. In where if the passing game really can't get going, the staff knows if you hand the ball off to Ronnie, something good's probably going to happen. So I was really, I've been really impressed by him. I know that, you know, fans have heard me gloat about how it's the Ronnie Smith bandwagon, everybody aboard now while there's still room. As you know, I thought he was going to be a tremendous player, and he's come along a lot faster than I thought he would be. But I mean, it's been a different look with Ronnie opposed to Roderick. And with Rodney, I think, like I said, he's going to be the guy that's probably going to get the majority of the carries, probably 75% going forward. I still think they're going to have Roderick Williams in there for short yard situations and to spell Rodney. And then I wouldn't be surprised if we see more Shannon Brooks, which I was a little bit surprised that he only got that one carry, which was the read option where Liner and Brooks couldn't decide who wanted the ball and resulted in a fumble. But I mean, overall, I thought it was a pretty positive game. Obviously, 41 carries for 186 yards if you count the Mitch Liner and Chris Trevor carries. So 180 yards, about 4 yards a carry. I'll take that every day of the week. That results in a first down more times than not. So I'd give it probably a B+.
All right, great. I'm curious from both of you. We've seen, obviously, you know, career high in attempts from Leidner throwing the ball. Are you a little surprised at the balance we're seeing right now, you know, run to pass? Right now, the Gophers are, through two games, have 80 rushing attempts to 80 pass attempts. So it's straight 50-50. Is that a surprise to either of you?
I think that part of it is, and that I think they've run more up-tempo quick passes, you know, with a no huddle, up-tempo offense. I think that part's been surprising. On the other hand, they struggled, especially in the first half of the Colorado State game, to run the ball. So of course, just by virtue of how the game plays out, you're going to end up throwing more if you're not getting, you know, what you need on first and second down running the ball. So I think it probably was a little bit of both, but, the part I think that is surprising is seeing a little bit more of the 3 and 4 wide receiver sets throwing some quicker passes out of the up-tempo offense. So I'd say, yeah, I mean, when you break down the plays that way, just given Jerry Kill's staff and their history, that definitely should be a shock. I think they, as they typically say during every game, they want to run the ball 60 or 65% of the time. I think that's true. So just looking at the raw numbers, I think it's surprising. But then, yeah, as the game's played out, I think having the quicker passes has been a surprise.
I mean, just looking at the game script and how game flows went, it's been back-to-back games where Liners had to pass a lot in the second half, and usually that hasn't been Minnesota's MO under Coach Kill, and obviously Matt Lime Grover, but I think that number is eventually going to come back down to somewhere around 60-40. As the game script and the game flows start to get into a better rhythm and this offense starts to get, you know, some more if this offensive line continues to gel and get some continuity there along the offensive line, I think that's also a huge part of the things that Derek and I got to discuss here. But I think it's 50-50 now, I think that's a lot about game script, game flow. Minnesota's had to drive the field in the third and fourth quarters to get some scores. So obviously not a ton of time to run the ball and try to kill clock, things like that. So not a surprise, but I think it comes back down to reality here and back down to the mean in the next few games.
All right, let's talk about that offensive line a little bit. You know, historically, maybe it seems like it takes a little bit of time for the offensive line to gel under the Kill and Lime Grover system. I'm wondering if that has anything to do, you know, with that running game, but I'm also curious to hear your guys' letter grades for the offensive line in this game in particular.
I would say, you know, offensive line play was up and down. There were times, you know, series where they really just couldn't get anything going. And I think that's partly their execution and, you know, getting a good push, getting blocks on the second and third level has been difficult at times. And just weren't executing, weren't being physical enough. And I think the other part of that is, again, the way everything plays off each other in football. You're having difficulty throwing the ball. I think what Colorado State wanted to do in their game plan, and I give credit to their coaches, was to run tight man coverage on passing, which then would allow their interior guys to really focus in between the tackles, stopping the run. So I think part of that was a scheme from Colorado State as well. But I think overall, you know, that's the down part. The up part was they did have some series in the second half where they started pressing the edge on zone read, getting outside the tackle. It also helped to throw some of the bubble screens, helped the running game a little bit, gets the outside linebackers covering more of the field. I think that helped a little bit. But as far as the offensive line play itself, I think if they were to go back and look at the film, there's room for improvement. I would probably say a C.
Jeez, are you negative?
well, there's room. Being a former offensive lineman, I'm going to be hard on them. You know, there's always room for improvement, and there's five guys on every play, so the coaches can usually find a couple guys that need to get better on every running play. So a lot of opportunities for coaching on the offensive line.
Is there anybody that stood out in particular?
You know, again, no, not really. I think you know, they had Persig, I think, did pretty well. I know, got beat on one, just a straight speed rush on one play that was, you know, being left tackle, it's a visible position, pass blocking. But I thought he did pretty well. Again, the up and down coming from just some plays, missed assignment or just a mental error on pass protection. Again, and then other plays doing better. But no, I wouldn't say either way anybody stood out. One way or another, a couple nice plays from Bovic, the center, being able to reach the nose guard, the one technique, and a couple of those nice zone running plays. That's a tough block to make, and you know, he was able to do that at least once. Really nice play that we're able to keep play side, and I think Smith ended up with 10 plus yards in the carry. So you know, a couple, you know, different plays, different guys here and there, but. You know, like I said, just up and down, have to be more consistent.
I mean, I don't know how I compete with a former Gopher offensive lineman giving that kind of breakdown. So, I mean, that was really thorough and in-depth, and we appreciate it. I mean, my short, quick take is someone, you know, as an analyst here, is just I thought that they are just searching for more, you know, just continuity and just, you know, with – John Christensen going out with a knee injury. He's already been ruled out for the Kent State game. That worries me. You know, Joe Bjorklund's going to have to step up. You got Josh Campion back, and every series I saw, he was at right tackle, and Persig was at left. So it looks like Josh is getting very close to 100%, which is very good news for this Gopher offense. But I mean, overall, I thought that again. It's tough for me to compete with Derek there, but I thought the interior of the offensive line, you know, they played better more than times than they didn't. I thought Persig, for a guy who's really playing a second game at left tackle in a few years, continues to progress, and, you know, he got burned the one time. But I'll take only once a game compared to, you know, an injured Lauer when it was two or three times in the first quarter. So I'm encouraged, but I think this group needs to stay healthy as the depth is, again, it's thin because behind them is very young guys, but, you know, I'd say probably a B minus for this offensive line. As Derek said, they have some room to go.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the tight end group. This is a group that we obviously know has been decimated by injury early in this season, not having Duke Anyanwu. And and then also not having Lincoln Plezic, the road grader there. And then this game, you know, first reception for Brandon Lingen in the game, he actually goes out with a concussion. So again, they're you know, they're digging into the depth chart. But I'd like to get your opinions on how those guys played, and especially, you know, both in the running game and blocking and in the passing game as well. So we'll start with you, Derek.
I would give them probably a B or a B plus. I thought they did well. It's a position that, with the exception of Max Williams, they've you know, called on for a lot of blocking and a little less pass catching. But I think so with that in mind, I think the visibility in this game was up. I think they were able to make a few plays and do well. And I think run blocking, again, I think pretty good. I think the blocking on the edge was a little bit better than it was in the interior line. So Yeah, overall, I would say a B or a B plus for the tight end group, and which is encouraging, like you said, with having one guy go out with an injury and having other guys come in and step up. I think that's was encouraging to see.
It is encouraging, and I can tell you that this may be the position on the team I am most worried about right now, for all the reasons Luke said. Duke Onyanwu and Lincoln Plezic might be lost for the year, which would be it would really test the depth of this Gopher tight end group, considering those guys were considered to be starters. Brandon Langan, who is definitely in that top three tight end group, went out with a concussion. Kill hasn't said anything about that yet. He'll talk about that Tuesday afternoon at his press conference. But you're really down to Nate Wozniak, the 6'10" tight end. You're down to walk-on Nick Hart, who made a couple of key plays there in the waning moments of the game. You also have another guys are going to be forced into action. Colton Beebe, a true freshman, I expect to probably see him a lot more, especially if Brandon Langan can't play. Noah Scarver, the transfer from Washburn. And here's a guy that I'm curious to see, and I haven't seen him on the field at all in the first two games, is Jerry Gibson. Where is he? Is my question. He's been playing H-back. He's the redshirt freshman from Alabama. The Gophers got him over South Carolina. And I understand he's a redshirt freshman. He's going to take some time to develop. But you'd figure with three tight ends out / H-backs, Minnesota would be willing to play him a little bit as a playmaking tight end, especially with Lingen out. So I'm a little bit concerned as to, where he is, but this tight end depth is going to be tested very quick. You have one scholarship guy left, two with Colton Beebe, two walk-ons, and whatever you get from Jerry Gibson. So, if Derek gives him a B or a B-plus, considering the personnel Minnesota's got on the field there with a bunch of guys who weren't really expecting much from this year, I'd say that's a hell of a game, especially from a guy like Nick Hart. He had to come in and played a lot of snaps, and he almost had that diving catch in the end zone there. He caught the one.
He played well.
He did. So, Minnesota's tight end depth is going to be tested, and, they proved in that game that they're up to the challenge. And with Kent State coming in, not a great team, I hope that some of these young guys can keep getting the jitters out, getting some work so they can get ready for the Big Ten season. So I'd probably give them a B as well.
All right, let's transition to the very last position group on offense and talk about the wide receivers. They definitely play a key role in this passing game, just being able to get separation and get open. Wolitarski, he's had two really pretty good games. So, with that in consideration, what's the letter grade, Derek, for the wide receiver group?
Boy, it's tough because it was peaks and valleys with that group. Made some really nice plays, especially when they needed it. Was encouraging to see Wolitarski. They moved him inside on some plays, which I think really helped. Helped on some of the out routes and things he was able to run from that position. And then, of course, the catch by May was great. So a lot of peaks, but then again, some pretty, pretty visible drops, which, in situations where they really needed it, at least a handful of those. I would say, so taking all that into consideration, I would probably say probably a B from that group, maybe a B minus, again, when you consider that just the passing game as a whole was not where it needed to be, but probably a B or a B minus.
Yeah, I just think that this group needs to just continue to be consistent. The guy who had through two games, Drew Wolitarski, the junior, the white speed receiver for this Gopher team, has already surpassed through two games his reception total from last year, his total yardage, and number of touchdowns. So he had a heck of a game. I mean, he made some key catches when Minnesota needed him most, driving in the third and fourth quarter there. I turned on the Jets around the edge there, scored the touchdown, and then made a very good leaping grab there, and I believe it was a key third down there in the fourth quarter. So I thought that Drew Wolitarski has stepped up, and as has KJ May, even though he's had some issues with a few drops, which is something I really wasn't expecting. It's something that hadn't really surfaced in fall camp at all. I think he's got three or four drops. As a senior, as a guy I was expecting a big year from. I mean, it's probably just my expectations of him are raised, but I'm expecting more from him, and I probably won't get to see it this week. As Kill was saying after the game, he held them out of that last drive in the fourth quarter and overtime, as May was coughing up blood on the sidelines, which is obviously never good, and Kill saw that, took that into consideration, and rested him. And the word is he may have a potential broken rib. And for anyone who's had a broken rib out there, you know that it hurts to breathe, it hurts to laugh, it hurts to really do anything. So for a kid who played through that drive and had the game-winning touchdown, the game-tying touchdown in the fourth quarter there, that's a tough SOB, I will tell you what. So kudos to him. But, again, it's just consistency from this group. Melvin Holland drops an easy one on a key third down there. Literally went right into his hands, and he was looking up field beforehand. So just consistency from this group. I'd say probably a B- or a C+. Probably not as high as Derek is, but heck of a performance from Drew Olatarski, that's for sure.
All right, guys, let's transition to that defensive line and the defense really in general on the other side of the ball from the offense. And let's start with the defensive line. Let's talk about specifically the interior defensive line seemed to play well. So, Derek, what were your thoughts and observations?
Well, I thought the defensive line played outstanding. Starting with the interior defensive line, a lot of times they're not asked to make tackles per se. A lot of times it's defending a gap or taking on blockers, taking up space, putting their teammates in a position to make tackles. And really, I thought on Saturday they did that, but they also just made plays. They were able to get great penetration, the tackles for loss. They had sack, fumble slash interception. I mean, just for that position to be that visible and be able to make that many plays was incredible. I thought that, across the board was very good, but I thought that Steven Richardson was outstanding. I mean, it's tough to play better than that. I mean, he was unblockable for parts of the game. I also thought that Andrew Stelter had a couple of plays specifically that stood out, and that was exciting to see. Defeated a double team block early in the game, made a nice play. So interior was just incredible. I thought defensive ends played well as well. They have a nice technique they're using on three-step drop passing, where they're dropping one of the defensive ends into coverage if the running back goes out on a route or they don't keep in a blocker, and that seems to be playing out pretty well for them. And got another nice pass deflection on Saturday and had the near interception against TCU. So that's been a nice wrinkle for them this year. And so across the board on the defensive line, I would give them an A-. I thought they had a very good game.
Yeah, seriously, though, how good was Steven Richardson on Saturday? I mean, that was so much fun to watch. For those who don't know what Steven did on Saturday, he finished with 7 tackles, 3 tackles for loss, a sack, a forced fumble, a fumble recovery, a pass batted down, and he hit the quarterback. That wasn't a sack. So, I mean, he was incredible. Coach Kill addressed that in his press conference today, and Kill said, and I quote, Steven played one of the best games I've ever seen a defensive tackle play. He was flat out unbelievable, and he was a highlight video, end quote. So Steven really did play out of his mind. And, again, I don't think it's out of the question to start thinking about if, Steven really does continue this play that he's been, consistently for the rest of the season here. I understand he's only played 14, 15 games in his Gopher career, but he's sitting here with almost 4 tackles for loss already through 2 games. And if he gets that into the 7 to 8 range, I don't think it's out of the possibilities for him to be an all Big Ten defensive tackle. I'm actually expecting it. So I think that Steven's going to have a heck of a Gopher career, I mean, obviously. And like Derek said, I get a lot of questions the last few days about where's Tank Ekpe been? Because I predicted him to be one of the breakout stars with Gopher defense. And like Derek talked about, these Gopher defensive ends, if it's a three-step drop, they're dropping off into coverage, and that's why you saw Hank, get a pass deflected. You saw Darren Cochran do a couple of things like that in the TCU game as well. I mean, Derek would probably know better than I would, but I haven't seen as many 7 to 9, I don't know how prevalent the 9-step drop is college football going against some of the teams that the Gophers do, but I haven't. There's been a lot of short dropbacks, the 3 to 5 step, and especially with the Gophers dropping off these defensive ends into coverage, I mean, you're not going to get the sack numbers, and which is why these quarterbacks have had some time, you know, with Steven Richardson flushing them out of the interior part. But Derek, the one thing I want to get your opinion on as a former Golden Gopher center is how tough is it to go against a guy like Steven Richardson, who is listed at 6 foot, but trust me, the man's 5'9", but he is 295 pounds. So how tough is it to go against a guy like Steven, who's 5'9", compared to a normal defensive tackle who's around like 6'4"?
Well, it's difficult. For someone with that stature, they're able to play with a low center of gravity. In the strength that he has, he's a strong kid. And so you combine those two things with his stature, and it's a tough to move a guy like that. When you're zone blocking, if you don't have or man blocking without a double team, you just look for things like positioning against those guys. You don't expect to come off the ball and drive those guys, you know, 1 or 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. It's just not going to happen. And as a matter of fact, on Saturday, there were many times when Steven and the rest of the Gophers interior line were driving Colorado State blockers into the backfield and shifting the line of scrimmage. So the short answer is it's tough, if not impossible, to get a push on those guys playing with that low of pad level. And he seems to have perfected it this year. You know, he's got another year of experience. He's probably making his reads quicker. He's able to read run or pass or what type of blocking, you know, whether he's getting a double team or whether it's a zone block. And he's just defeating the blocks. I mean, he's pressing through. And he was able to get through on one play where they did drop the defensive end, like we talked about, and it brought a three-man rush. I mean, they had three guys rushing against five blockers and were able to get pressure on the quarterback. And that's if you could do that on most plays, the defensive coordinator, that's a dream for him, you know, to be able to bring three guys and get pressure. So it was, yeah. Blocking a guy like that is presents a problem, and I think it will continue to be for Gopher opponents.
Yeah, so to wrap things up here, I thought the defensive line did all right, did well. Again, it's tough to get pressure. Like Derek was saying, if they're doing these 3 and 5 step drops, if the defensive ends are dropping into coverage. But, I mean, for the most part, I thought the defensive line was pretty stout. I'd definitely give them probably an A- or a B+.
All right, let's transition a level back and talk about the linebackers. Obviously, huge play by Cody Polk to end the game. But what did you see, Derek? How would you grade these guys out?
I thought the linebackers did well. Beginning of the game, I thought they struggled a little bit. Colorado State came out with I formation, running some isolation blocking and some counters, and I think that caught the Gophers off guard a little bit. I'm not sure, wasn't able to see Colorado State's first game, so that was maybe something they didn't show a lot of in the first game, and it might have taken the Gophers off guard a little bit. So with the 4-3 defense, I think they got picked off a couple times over pursuing on the counter and the cutback. But the good news was they got that adjusted. I thought they adjusted playing that in the second half and even later in the first half. And I think they made some scheme adjustments in the second half as well, the way they played the outside linebackers. They brought those guys in for more run support and even brought in some guys from the secondary to help. So once they got that figured out, I thought they played pretty well. Again, there was a little less sideline to sideline running for those guys than it was versus TCU. But I thought they filled the holes pretty good against the run. And once they saw that some of those things a few times, they were able to adjust and have a pretty solid game. It seemed like they played quite a few guys as well. I didn't see, you know, a big drop off or a big change with any of the groups or any individuals. So I guess across the board, I would probably give them a B. Again, if you take away some of those things at the beginning and some of those, the start of the game was a little rough, they'd probably be in the A- category, but I would give them a solid B.
Yeah, I thought they played well. As Derek said, I mean, there were some issues earlier in that first quarter on that scoring drive where, you know, it didn't look like the defense was totally prepared for the counter. That was something that was asked of Tracy Clay, defensive coordinator for the Gophers, at the press conference this earlier this afternoon, and it was something that Clay's admitted that they weren't really truly prepared for as much. It was something they'd practiced, but in hindsight, he said that he wished they would have practiced a little bit more. And as you saw as the game went on, Clay's adjusted, and the counter was something that was, you know, not working as well. So with, you know, guys like Everett Williams and Jonathan Celestine, they were the two that got the start, especially after Celestine really hadn't seen the field at all against TCU. It was good to see him out there. Everett Williams really getting his first, you know, significant action of the season. I thought that, you know, again, I'm not an elite defensive mind like Mike Sherrills, Tracy Clays, or even Jerry Kill, but I thought the two linebackers that performed better were Cody Polk and Devondre Campbell. Kill said that Devondre was dealing with a little bit of a discipline issue. I forget if he was late to a class or a practice, a meeting.
I think a meeting, yeah.
Was it a meeting? So, again, it's something Kill took seriously, and he didn't get the start. So something as minuscule as that to you and I is something big to Kill, and it's all about attention to details, and that's why Kill's such a successful coach. But another interesting point I want to bring up is that Kill mentioned in his press conference today, and I quote, from the linebacker standpoint, I thought it was our best game as a linebacking unit since we've been here, which I was surprised to hear just because, you know, of my college football eye, I thought that early on it was rough. But obviously as the game went on, Jack Lynn played well, Cody Polk, Everett Williams even brought some things. So, again, I think that Cody Polk is going to be so exciting to watch these next 3 years. He's still working on being consistent, but there's no doubt in his athletic abilities and his instincts, and I think he's going to be a really good linebacker by the time he leaves Minnesota, especially under Tracy Clays and Mike Sherrills. So as a unit, I can't go against the man, Coach Kill, so I would probably say an A-.
All right, let's go back to that secondary, which we knew going into the season was going to be a strength of this team, and I was really looking forward to getting to see them go against Rashard Higgins, but unfortunately that didn't come to fruition. We didn't get to see him play. He was sidelined with an injury, and the Gopher secondary really was a little bit stung by the injury bug too, without Demaryius Travis and Ace Rogers playing. So, Derek, give me your assessment on the secondary and how they played in this game.
I thought the secondary was incredible. They, despite having their number one wide receiver injured, Colorado State, I think, was pretty celebrated with their personnel and at wide receiver just as a group. And I thought the Gophers defense really secondary owned the wide receivers pretty much all game. They had a couple missed tackles early in the game on some of those counter plays, some of the running plays, and I think they'd like to have those plays back, but their downfield pass coverage is just something to just sit back and watch and sort of marvel at. We're almost taking it for granted at this point. You know, I can tell you that from a defensive perspective, if you have one corner, let alone two, that are able to line up and man press coverage, bump the receivers off their routes early in the routes, and then be able to turn around and run at full speed down the field next to the wide receiver and then turn your head and play the ball, to be able to do that consistently is rare. They're trying to do more of that in the NFL. That's some of the schemes that teams are trying to build in order to defend the NFL passing game, which is so prevalent. But I mean, at the college level, you're able to do that one-on-one. It frees up so much more that you're able to do underneath. And these guys are doing it. They've got several guys that can do it, and they're doing it every game. So it's we're starting to take it for granted, I think, and you got to step back and understand that these guys are playing or doing things easily that are very difficult for some teams to ever do. So I thought they played very well. Obviously you add in a couple interceptions, which were great, just great plays on the ball. I thought Colorado State's starting quarterback struggled a little bit, so I had to take that into consideration. But the backup I thought was very competent. But overall, I would give that group probably an A-, and I would expect them. I don't see, barring injuries, I don't see where that's going to change. I don't, you know, they did mix in some zone, and they had a couple busted coverages in the second half. But apart from that, and a couple missed tackles, it was it was a really exciting, really, really something to marvel at.
And I hope that Gopher fans can truly appreciate and truly marvel at how deep and just how good this Gopher secondary is. As I've been stating for at least the last few months, that this may be the best Gopher starting secondary in the history of Gopher football. I mean, honestly, I mean, you can shake your head at that again all you want, but you have two NFL corners who are going to be making a lot of money next year in Breann Calhoun and Mr. Eric Murray. Demaryius Travis, if they can get him healthy here soon, is someone who I think is definitely going to be playing at the next level. Antonio Johnson is an extremely dependable safety. And then your nickel guy is Jalen Myrick, who I think come 2016 draft is going to be a guy that the NFL is going to fall in love with his amazing speed and the way he can accelerate. So it's just something that I hope fans take in each and every game of this 2015 season, as you never know when it could be, you know, short taken away. I mean, how bad were the secondaries? I mean, I don't mean to rag on Derek and these former Gophers, but I mean, they're some of these secondaries that were being put out there were, I mean, a little suspect to put into a nice term. But, I mean, it's so fun to watch these guys. You know, the first play of the game, they take a deep shot. And, I mean, you have a guy, ball hawk, and a playmaker like Bobby Calhoun watch it off his hand and just go get the ball. Or you have a guy like Jalen Myrick, tags on his hip for the first 15 yards, turns his head, looks, spots the ball, easy INT. You have a guy like Antonio Johnson. A deep ball, you know, he gets beat, he recovers perfectly, puts his hands up, bats the ball away, you know, a pass breakup that would have been a 35-40 yard gain. So, again, it's just so fun to watch these guys, and especially with their tackling and everything about it. I just feel like if these guys stay healthy, they're in for a tremendous year, and it's something that, again, I hope fans appreciate. So, overall, the one thing I do want to talk about is that busted coverage that it looked like Bobby Calhoun and Kume Ayinde on that, I forget what, I think it was a post, wasn't it, Derek? On that long 55-yard touchdown pass. I forget what the route was specifically, but Clay's addressed that in the Gophers press conference earlier this afternoon, and apparently it was a missed signal by Kume. Filling in for Demaryius Travis and Ace Rogers, the walk-on from Blaine, gave a wrong signal. There was a little bit of a busted coverage there because of that. And so Body was expecting there to be a safety underneath, and there wasn't one. So there was a busted coverage for that long touchdown. But, again, for the most part, I thought the secondary played well. It'll continue to be the strength of this Gopher team. So I would probably give him an A-minus as well.
All right, let's transition to sometimes the overlooked position in football, or position group in football, being the special teams. Let's talk about, you know, all facets, returns, kickoff and coverage, and then punting and field goals. So, Derek, what was your assessment of the special teams performance this last Saturday?
I thought they performed well. I think that's a hallmark of Coach Kill's teams, and I think that's what he emphasizes, and he would be disappointed if it was otherwise. But overall, I thought they performed well. I think the punting game, you know, which is the part that people don't like when you have to punt, and it's such an overlooked part of the game because people are frustrated usually going into a punting situation, and it's really something you usually only call out when there's some real bad punts. But I think it stood out as exceptional. I mean, there was really good punting overall, so they're doing well in that area, and the punt coverage as well. Field goal kicking and kickoffs, you know, they had the one miss. Santoso missed on one, but was able to hit a long. I think it was a 50-yarder. So I would say overall they did pretty well there. I think the coaches would be happy with that. They'd like to be perfect, but overall would be happy. And then in the return game, I think the return game was pretty good. You know, we have to take keep in mind the penalty, a delay of game penalty for an illegal or advancing the ball after a fair catch signal after they reviewed it was what happened. And obviously he takes that for a touchdown, and without the fair catch signal, it would have been 7 points. No telling, I guess, how the defense maybe reacted from the signal. But I think overall the return game was good. So as a special teams unit, I would give them probably a B+. You know, if they hit that extra field goal and, you know, take that punt back for a touchdown without the penalty, I would give it an A or an A minus, but I would say a B plus.
Yeah, I don't have much more to add there, I guess. You know, Derek took everything I was going to say there. But I'm a little bit not concerned is not the right word, but with Craig James and these punts, I mean, he did, you know, try to swat the fly, is what everybody on Twitter kept saying. He was swatting at the fly for that fair catch signal. And he did return it for a touchdown, but it was obviously it was called back. But, you know, his decision-making on which punts to field versus which ones he isn't has been just a little bit something to watch through eight quarters. There's been some that he hasn't fielded that have bounced from the 25 all the way inside the five. And then there's been a few he's fielded inside the five. And it's like, well, I mean, just decision-making there. So with Santoso, I mean, there's not a lot to say there. Three of four. He didn't miss the one, but he did make the one from 52. I believe it was 52. And then he made the game winner. So, again, he's for a kid who is, you know, still young, still his own, only in his second year of varsity kicking here at Minnesota. No qualms there. Peter Martell, all Big Ten punter. So I would say probably a B-plus as well.
All right, let's kind of give overall grades for the performance as a team and also maybe a grade for the coaching staff and, you know, the game plan, mix those into one. So, Derek, let's start with you.
Well, I would say overall for the offense, probably about a C. I think started off, obviously, was very rough in the first half. Got to give them some points for coming back in the second half and putting together some drives. They're, you know, moving forward, they're, you know, it's stating the obvious, but they've got to become more consistent. They've got to reduce the number of, you know, I don't want to say busted plays as in missed assignments, but plays that they just don't execute on, whether it's a missed block or the throw is a little off or a drop pass. And they just got to limit that. And the coaches know that, and they're going to work with them. But, you know, so on the offense, I would probably give that group a C. It'll be interesting to see as the season progresses some of the new things they're able to add and to see how this changes and maybe maybe lets them be a little bit more dynamic. It would be nice to see. On the defensive side of the ball, just as a group, I would probably say A minus. Again, things we talked about was I would say a dominating performance by the Gophers defensive line, a solid performance by the linebackers, and again the secondary just fun to watch. I mean, just able to lock down you know, what Colorado State was able to do in the passing game. It's been really fun to, you know, defenses, we want to see them just do well and get off the field, but, you know, to look back at the X's and O's and see how this thing unfolds and how the team attacks is just really fun. You know, Minnesota takes away the deep passing with their man coverage, so teams come back and try to throw short passes and three-step and underneath routes, and now Minnesota's, like we talked about, is dropping a defensive end and bringing pressure with the people up the middle. And sometimes when they drop the end, they're bringing the inside linebackers on a blitz. So it's just fun to see how that has played out. And you know, the if this, do that, and the reaction and the chess game. So, but overall on defense, I would give it an A minus. Coaching staff, I would say the things we talked about, they have to improve on, obviously, offense. They've got to get some things figured out. They've got to determine, you know, where they want to go, where their big plays are going to come from, how they can iron out some consistency. Defense, I think, you know, the game plan and what they've been able to build, not just this year, but over the past few years, has been exceptional. Where I will give the coaching staff some extra points is, you know, kind of glossed over, but going on the road and playing a good team, you know, a team that had a lot of success last year, has some talent back this year, new coaching staff, and you know, I thought they were well prepared. So it wasn't like they were going in and playing a team that made a ton of mistakes and they could just sort of walk all over the field and come away with a W. So, I'll give the coaching staff some points for that. I would give the coaching staff a B and overall for the game, probably in the B category.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to talk about this Gopher offense, I'm going to probably stick with the C+. They did total over 400 yards of total offense, and people are going to focus on only the quarterback plays, obviously. That's the most visual part of any team for the most part. And while, I mean, you may not disagree with this coaching staff's decision to stay in with Leidner, I mean, his decision making has been better, and I think this offense has been beneficial because of that. There's some things they got to figure out on the offensive line with John Christensen out for 4 weeks, having knee surgery yesterday. How are they going to replace him? Joe said today that there are two other starters in the offensive line that are not going to be practicing today as well. So there's just some things to figure out with the offensive line, how they keep gelling together as guys keep being switched around. And as Derek will tell you, it's a different feeling playing so having someone new next to you each and every week. So the wide receivers have to, again, pick it up. They have to – I'm tired of seeing – I know it's only two games in, and, I mean, who am I to call them out? But it's been three or four drops a game, and you have to help out Leiner here, and especially for a guy who has been inconsistent as Leiner has been, you need to give him some help. Rodney Smith, not much more I can really say about him. I think he's going to be a special back. But, again, a lot of places this team can improve on, a lot of places – where I think in the next two games, they're going to really try to focus on that and keep guys healthy is something that they need to do. And so C-plus overall. On the defensive side of things, again, it's something where it's so much fun to watch Tracy Clay's defense. And the defensive line with Steven Richardson to Cody Polk to Bobby Calhoun. I mean, there's 11 guys back there who know what they're doing, are extremely talented in what they're doing, and it's fun to watch them grow. I'd probably go an A-minus, B-plus as well. Again, they forced the turnovers, especially when they needed it most. Steven Richardson played the game of his life so far. So an A-minus there. And as far as the coaching, again, there was a timeout. I don't remember what part of the game it was, but it was an odd place to take a timeout where the play clock ran down. It looked like the play didn't get in there in time. But I'm probably going to sit at a B-plus for this coaching staff. Keel talked about it today where he said that Minnesota has the highest record against their opponents. And again, that was probably an awful way to try and phrase that. But what I'm trying to say is Minnesota's first two opponents this year combined for a record of 22-4 last year. And that's the highest in the nation compared to any team. I mean, you can look at Michigan State. They just played Oregon, but then they also played Western Michigan. You can look at Ohio State. They played Virginia Tech, a revenge game for them last year, but then they played Hawaii. So Minnesota's had two extremely tough games, and now they finally get to settle down a little bit with Kent State and Ohio. And just for the staff to come out prepared in a tough environment like Colorado State, and especially not having the way that they wanted things to go in the first half, to get them rallied back in that third and fourth quarter, get the game tied, and then pull it out in overtime, that's not your traditional Minnesota Gopher football team. For as much as the media personalities love to say, oh, here we go, same old Gophers. What are they talking about? I cannot believe that is still the same mantra, as this Gopher team is so much different from the ones in the past under Glenn Mason and the other coaches. So this isn't the same old Gophers. It's the Jerry Kill Gophers. And this is a team that's won back-to-back 8-win seasons, and they look to be well on their way to 8 again. So, B-plus there. So, again, we can't thank, to wrap things up here, we can't thank Derek Burns enough for joining us again. Again, he's one of the elite Gopher football minds in all of the country. You can give Derek a follow on Twitter if you love, hearing what he does. He does a game breakdown on the Sundays. Is it the Sundays, Derek?
Yeah, usually, depending on the schedule when I can get him in, usually Sunday nights.
Yeah, so... if you enjoy listening to him, you can follow him on Twitter. He does picture breakdowns with extreme detail on what he thinks happened here, what happened there. Again, if you can't get enough Gopher football, he's a great follow. So it's at Derek, D-E-R-E-K underscore S underscore Burns, B-U-R-N-S. So he's a great follow there. And Derek, again, phenomenal job breaking down this Gopher versus Colorado State game. And we're excited to have you back on next week. So can't thank you enough, sir.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it a lot. I love what you guys are doing, and it's fun to talk Gopher football and college football. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. So, again, thank you for listening to the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast by GopherDigest.com, and we'll join you here in a few days, and go Gophers.